Hello and welcome back to another episode of On Spec. I am your host, Ryan Barath. Now today there's a lot to talk about, like there always is in the world of golf on a Monday, or in my case, a later Sunday evening. We had two PGA Tour events, which we are going to talk about, but what I want to kind of tease for a little later in the show is the topic of club building and club fitting this week is on the question that often comes up when people discuss club building and club fitting, and that is it an art or is it a science? And I kind of think it goes a little bit in both directions, depending on which aspect you're looking at, to be completely honest with you. And like a lot of the topics that I talk about, they have this little moment, usually earlier in the day, or I'm doing something where I'm trying to think of, like, okay, what am I going to talk about this week? And it means that, like, I literally have this conversation in my head almost every week. And the whole synthesis, see, I got that right that time. This is actually the third take of the intro because I couldn't say the word synthesis. The whole point and the origin of this discussion came from something that I've been doing recently a lot because it's wintertime and I can't go out and practice or I can't do any other thing. So if you do happen to follow me on social media, have it be Twitter or Instagram, RDS Brath on either one. And then also the podcast has its own Instagram page, which is OnSpecWRX. You can follow along there as well. But kind of everywhere it kind of posts everything, or most of the time anyways. And one of the things I've been doing a lot, and I've really gotten into it, is baking. And it's actually, baking is actually probably the wrong term. It's cooking. I don't know. Do you cook a pizza or do you bake a pizza? That's a good question. Is making pizzas. And because of this, like a lot of people getting into something that they're curious about, I literally just turned, when people turn to club building and club fitting, they turn to things that I put up on the internet as well. I turned to YouTube and I just started looking things up. And my wife has been a baker and a cook for a long time. One of her hobbies that she really enjoys, and I enjoy cooking, but as far as baking goes, I never really, and I know this seems like way off topic, but one of the things that I always liked when I cooked was I could kind of just throw everything into the pan and, you know, just see how it ends up, and usually if I add enough spice to it or whatever, I didn't really care. But baking comes down to exact ingredients, and this to me is like the part where I find it very interesting, and the reason it kind of clicked for me relatively recently was I was having a discussion and someone said, no, it was my wife, or we were reading something, and she said, well, it's really just chemistry, and chemistry is an exact science. And if you don't do chemistry right, then you don't get the desired result. And I've had things that have worked out really well and things that have completely failed. And for me, it's making pizza dough. I know, trust me, I'm going to get to club building in a second. So what's been going on is I've been trying to go through this process of making pizza dough, and sometimes the yeast will work, or I let it rise too long, or the temperature sucks, or I use the wrong yeast, or I don't use the right amount, or all these kind of things, and sometimes it turns out absolutely fantastic, and those are the ones that you'll generally see, and you'll see ones that aren't that pretty, and I mean, they still taste okay, but I know that something went wrong, and to me, it's kind of like the same with club building and club fitting, so we're going to get to that. I know that was a very long intro about pizza before I got anywhere else. So let's get to the events of the week, and then we'll get back to pizza, and actually technically club building and club fitting. So we'll get to that in a second. So we had two events this week on the PGA Tour, which is always very interesting. So we had the event in Puerto Rico, won by Victor Hovland with a monster putt on the 18th hole, kind of like the old home run walk-off, as people like to say. And then we also had Patrick Reed win in Mexico at the WGC event. Obviously, very contrasting fields. We have the WGC, which is the top 50 players in the world are invited, as well as players from the European Tour and the Asian Tour. And it was a really good leaderboard the whole week. One of the things that was very interesting about having it being played in Mexico at the course that it's played at, it was at very high elevation, like over 7,800 feet above sea level. And players, I know it was all over social media, stock yardages were 225 yards, 7 irons, and all this stuff. And it's based on the percentage of, as you go up, air density goes down, and the ball reacts differently. The ball doesn't spin more or less. The ball just spins based off the shot that was hit. That is just physics. It's pretty simple. The golf ball doesn't know the elevation that it's being struck at. It just gets hit and reacts. But what happens in the air is actually the reaction part again, because when the air is less dense, it creates less friction, less drag force. So the golf ball doesn't curve as much, which is always really interesting when they have shot tracer or top tracer, whatever it's called. And then also the fact that they are going to just mash it. And we saw this last year. I think Tiger Woods talked about lofting up one of his fairy woods. I know I wrote a piece for Golf WRX talking about adjusting for elevation. What was very cool earlier in the week that has just passed, after his win at the Genesis Invitational, I had the opportunity to talk to Adam Scott. And one of the questions I asked was if he would make any adjustments for elevation. And he said, no, you have to worry about the shots that you're going to hit. And some players are going to adjust their equipment, and some players are going to really focus on, like I said, the shots that they plan on hitting around the golf course. And I thought this was really interesting because I never thought about it this way. I always think, maybe tweak your equipment and you'll hopefully, with them too as well, with pros, they have access to TrackMan. So you're going to plunk that TrackMan down, they're going to find their yardages, and they're going to hit shots, and then everything's dialed in within a 25-minute range session. But the other part of this is the fact that because the golf ball reacts differently in the air because of the thinner air, it actually doesn't want to stay up in the air as well. And these guys have tremendous amounts of ball speed, generally speaking. So because of that, you're going to see the golf ball want to stay in the air anyway. So that's why you're seeing these really long carry distances. But what he said is the fact that when he hits half shots, because the golf ball doesn't spin as much when you hit those half shots, that instead of being, say, trying to take 10% off a certain golf club and have it be, 10 yards short of your stock yardage, you hit that same shot, it's going to be 15 to 20 yards shorter because the spin doesn't create enough friction and doesn't create enough lift to stay in the air over that distance that it's supposed to carry, and it comes up short. And to me, that was extremely interesting. And I never thought about it that way. And to me, that's what makes these players so great, is when you have the opportunity to talk to them, you have this ability to kind of get inside their minds. And a lot of times they're giving you the, I love the new golf ball, I love the new irons, this new shaft is great. And that's part of their job. But I mean, it does work, right? But they a lot of times they try and hit their talking points. But Adam was very honest about a lot of the stuff he mentioned, as well as his wedges and things like that. But he doesn't change his bag setup. He just likes to adjust with a TrackMan, go out. And for him, it was all about that full shot. And I thought that was really fascinating. And the other fascinating thing is the fact that how this course plays. And one of the questions that often comes up when people talk about playing at their local muni or playing at their local club is, I wonder what it would look like for a pro to play at our course, right? When it's like 6,300 or 6,400 yards. And at 7,300 yards, playing at the elevation that was playing at, the course basically played at like 6,500 yards, depending on who you asked and based on ball speed and all these different things. So you got to see players almost drive a lot of these greens that were, say, 400 yards. Now, remember, we have to scale that number back because of the yardages. So in reality, that 7,300 yard golf course of the 400 yard par 4 is really a 355 yard par 4 at traditional average 800 feet above sea level kind of deal. So that to me is kind of the point, and they didn't tear it up. I mean, I think the winning score was, 18 for Patrick Reed. And so speaking of Patrick, let's get into his golf bag, because this, I think, is, being a free agent, always something that I like to talk about. Driver, Ping 400. Hasn't changed the new one yet. And I know when we talk about the gone with golfers and on the Golf Direct forums, one of the things I always say is, and I remember it came up a lot, was, how are they going to improve on the G400? It was like just the best driver ever. And it is still a fantastic driver. If you hit it off the middle, you're not really going to gain anything moving to something new. Then we have the 410. Oh, wait, 410 was in Victor's bag, but we'll get to that in a second. So then we have, it was a Callaway Fairwood, Callaway Hybrid, then the irons. Now, these became a talking point earlier in the year, or end of last year, in the Bahamas, among other things, because it's a prototype Patrick Reed signature iron from Grindworks, which is a company out of Japan. A lot of their product is forged at Endo, where a lot of other companies forge their irons. So he's the only guy who's using these irons on tour. They have his name on them. And then he's got Vokey wedges and a Scotty Cameron putter. So he's got a very mixed bag of golf clubs and a very, very custom set of irons. The only other person that's got a set of irons that was completely custom to him, and then some other players have adopted them on tour, would be Mr. Tiger Woods. Now, Victor's bag is different because he is a ping stapler. He won in Puerto Rico. We talked about that already. He's got the 410. He does have a TaylorMade Fairway in his bag. I don't know for sure, and I don't want to speak for the company, but I always know that Ping generally has a rule where it's like a 10 to 12 club. They do have 14 club deals with some players, but they do have some flexibility. The one couple things they usually don't have flexibility on is the putter and the driver. Although I believe it is Tony Finau who uses a Peretti. So they somehow worked that in, Tony. So he's been using one of those. But for Victor, he's got the 410 driver, the TaylorMade M5 fairway wood. He's got a Callaway utility as of the last what's in the bag that we got from him, 210 irons, i210 irons, Glide 2 or 3.0 i2 wedges, and a PLD putter, which is a Ping like custom made putter. It's got the grooves on it. It's really cool. And that's the one he used to drain that massive putt at the end of the tournament to obviously win. That's why you call it a walk-off, because people win. So with that in mind, very contrasting golf bags, very contrasting golf courses because of the yardage that they unofficially played at because of the altitude. And that gets into the topic of the like changing your equipment for, you know, conditions. And I talked about it already with Adam Scott and how he just looks at hitting certain shots. He doesn't like to change his equipment. Although in the same conversation we had, the only thing he said he liked to change was he would sometimes either remove a club from the shorter end of his bag and put in a longer iron or a driving iron for something like the Open Championship. So that would be like the only change in reality that he would make. And I think you'll see that from most players because they go, they set their equipment up. They don't want to worry about it. They don't want to think about it week to week. And we have to remember they're the best players in the world. So they're able to adjust on the fly. And I think when people talk about club building and club fitting and they get into the topic of, well, shouldn't I just change my golf swing? Or, you know, I don't have a very consistent golf swing to go get fit. And then you stick them on a TrackMan and their swing path and face angle is almost exactly the same every single time. So it's not about consistency. It's about the, like, you know, like I want to say accuracy versus consistency are two different things. So you can be extremely consistent, but extremely inaccurate. And that's what I think a lot of, you know, average handicap golfers are. You know, oh, I always miss the right, I always miss the left kind of deal, right? I always come short with this wedge, those kind of things. So with that in mind, when you have really good players, they can, you know, they make those little tiny tweaks that are a lot easier. Whereas for average players, being able to adjust your equipment is actually going to be a huge help because of that consistency versus accuracy thing. If you can make it consistent and then become more accurate because of a tweak in the process, being the equipment, then it's going to create a net gain as far as getting better. And this, if you are traveling around to play golf, a lot of players, I understand, aren't going to be changing your wedges. That can be in a very expensive process unless you have a couple different wedges, which, I mean, good on you. That's awesome. But generally speaking, you want wedges that are going to offer the most amount of versatility. Irons, you're probably not carrying different iron sets from course to course. If you are, you are a complete degenerate. I love you. That's amazing. I can't either confirm or deny that I've ever carried multiple sets of irons to a golf course based on conditions. They may have been in some close proximity, but I definitely didn't travel with two sets just to pick one out for that day. Although I have seen players roll up to first tees and pull clubs out of their bag before. That was always very interesting. Probably my most fun story on that would be, I was playing golf. I was invited to play with a friend of mine, and he invited another guy who used to be a European, played on the like European tour a little bit. I think he might have played a couple years, like on and off the PGA Tour, Web.com kind of thing, and or I guess it would have been the Nike Tour. He's a little bit older guy, and he was still like getting equipment from OEMs, and he'd get stuff to tweak, and he'd play in local events and things like that, and he was like arrived late. We were already on the tee. Pulls out a brand new R9, I think it was R9, super deep, like the big, deep, huge, like phase driver. Had a like a Fuji F1 Mitore in it, which I guess would have been probably close to 10 years ago now because they just launched the new one. And he's like, oh, I've never hit it before. Literally pulled the plastic off the club head. They kind of sent it to him based on his fitting specs from other drivers that he used. And he shot a smooth like 300 par with like two lost golf balls. And I thought, okay, wow, this guy's really freaking good. Anyways, so that was like the idea of like pulling brand new golf clubs out. But when it comes to tweaking, we as amateur golfers have the ability to tweak based on conditions, essentially anything that comes with a wrench. Think about that. That's the beauty of adjustable golf clubs. And that's the thing that I really like, not just being a complete golf club junkie because of swapping shafts and heads and head weights and all these different things that usually used to take a lot longer. And I know when I talk to Brian from Two Guys Talking Golf, we are both golf junkie equipment nerds as far as testing shafts and testing heads and all these things. He's completely gone to like the Club Connect system. So he can pull any shaft and any driver. He doesn't have to worry about the tips. And those are, I mean, sorry, Brian, that's a complete degenerate move. Good for you. I have huge respect for it. I prefer to use tips because I know certain shafts for me work in better heads. And like that's one of the things you can always consider when you're looking at golf clubs. But if it has a wrench, you can adjust it. That's kind of the point I was making. And which means if you're going to someplace where it is maybe a little bit wet, but it's not very windy, try lofting up a little bit because you're going to get maybe a little extra carry because you're not going to get that roll anyways. If you rely on roll with your drive, try just lofting up a little bit. Or if you're going and you're traveling and it's going to be very windy. So you're going someplace where you're going to maybe play links golf or just it's going to be very windy in general. Then you can have the opportunity to loft down, which is something you can consider to help keep it out of the wind, take a little spin off. And that's, you know, one of the really cool things about having these adjustable drivers. And for us, as just, if you're just talking as a general consumer, that wrench is a little mini fitting tool. And I might have used this story before potentially, but I know when I play with random golfers, it happens a lot, or it used to happen a lot more, is we'd be on the first tee, see them miss shots, and they, you know, I'm just paying attention to people's golf clubs. It's kind of just the nerd thing that I do. And, you know, I see someone with a driver and just look at it and think, okay, it's in the stock settings. You kind of get close to their golf bag. A lot of people don't carry head covers, whatever. Or they don't throw the head covers in the golf cart and they just kind of rattle around in the back there. And so I'm like, if you've adjusted this thing and, you know, a few clicks later, they're hitting it straighter. And you have that opportunity as a golfer, either to go to the driving range and do the kind of thing to do that fit, even if you buy a used club and it comes with a wrench, then you can go do that yourself and figure out what's helping reduce your misses and all that stuff. And that comes down to adjusting for, again, if you're traveling or your golf course, even the seasons. We are getting into golf season now, and that's going to help me touch on the next little topic of this whole discussion. And pardon me. And so that comes into, okay, in the springtime, it's going to be wet. I will generally loft my driver up a little bit just because I know I'm not going to get the roll. Most courses that I play are going to be extremely wet. And I'm not really worried about getting a little bit extra roll because I'm not going to get it anyways. It doesn't matter. But as we get into the summer, I'm going to just loft it straight down. If it's really windy, I'm not going to generally change anyways because I know based on the clubs that I use, my launch conditions are pretty good. So the wind's not going to do too much to my golf ball. I'm not optimized at all, but I'm getting closer. Speaking to optimization, I know the Ping, Marty Jurtson had come out. He did a little video with them on social media talking about maximizing your potential based on your attack angle, which I thought was really cool. I know that Ping fitting accounts have this. I haven't really seen it online yet, but it is one of those things where, you know, when you're talking about fitting a player, you have to go off of the player's dynamics unless that player plans on changing their dynamics. And this allows you to help fine-tune launch and spin depending on those players, right? I think Cameron Champ is the example they use because he's two down and people always say launched it really low, but that for him is like his window to offer maximum distance. That was a huge tangent there for no reason. So again, talking about the adjustability, you have that with you. So utilize as much as you can. And when we look at the winners of this week's PGA Tour events, one's a free agent, one is not a free agent, but you know they have some flexibility in their golf bag. Obviously, they're using a TaylorMade Fairway as a Ping player. Is just use what works, you know, because at the end of the day, no one pays me to play golf equipment. I'll tell you that straight out, like right off the bat. And if no one's paying you to play golf equipment either, then just use what fits you. Go out, and if you don't have the opportunity to go to a fitter, use that wrench. That wrench is a huge tool, and it'll help you adjust your golf clubs based on your conditions, based on your course, and just based on your own personal tendencies. So go out there and have some fun and help yourself figure out what's going to work best for you. All right, now back to the fun part, pizza. And as I was saying earlier, depending on the conditions of your dough and all these different things, the pizza comes out. I'm kidding, sorry. The whole part of this is the discussion of, is club building and club fitting an art or science? And I related it off the top on a 5-minute rant about pizza. Because when, you know, as I said, doing a deep dive on, not deep dish, oh, that was a pun. So doing the deep dive on, like, understanding different doughs and all these kind of things, I was like, okay, well, some people, there's a lot of factors that go into it. And it's this thing that kind of evolves. And that to me is club building. Building truly is a science because there are set parameters as far as what goes in and what comes out. And this relates to shaft, like cutting a club to length, measuring line length. Anytime you measure a parameter, like measure an exact parameter, that is a calculation, you could call it. I know it's like a weird, you know, you could relate it down to like scientist-y stuff. That's an air quotes thing there. Because when a spec comes to you, a spec is a specification to make sure that something is at a certain level or length or value, right? You want to get it to spec. And as I've always said, it kind of comes back to the idea of getting fit for a suit. And I used this analogy before recently in an Instagram story. So just to mention it again, that is RDS Breath on Twitter and Instagram, and OnSpecWRX on Instagram as well, which is the show's page. And the question was, what do you pay for a fitting? What are the levels of fitting and all these different things? And so how I explained it was going in and buying a set of clubs off the rack is better than not having golf clubs. So it's like going into a store and just buying a suit off the rack based on, you know, your chest size and waist size and height. That's totally fine. Then you have the next kind of step of this, which is we're going to take that set, we're going to tailor it. We're going to bring the hems up on the pants. We're going to bring the waist in at a certain size. Maybe we'll adjust the shoulders a little bit, adjust the length in the wrist. You're going to be all set. You're going to look great. And that is, you know, changing grip size, changing lie and loft, potentially a shaft change, but that is an expensive, more expensive part of the process. So we're just going to focus on length, lie, loft, and grip size. So that is like the tailoring aspect. Then you're going to get the opportunity to go and get fit for a suit and get it like made for you, or at least get it completely custom tailored for you from a kind of an off the, like, out of a group of options, right? So that means, you know, you pick the buttons and you do these different things. And that would be a custom fitting generally from, say, someone like an OEM, which is very common. And OEMs do a great job in fitting because their fitters are specifically trained to fit their golf clubs, so they know the ins and outs of what each model does. Now we go into the bespoke side of tailoring and building a set of golf clubs. And that means you go in, it's just you and your fitter. And this actually completely applies to getting a suit or a dress, for that matter, like custom wedding dresses or just dresses in general. And so what you're going to do is you're going to be able to work one-on-one with that person. You're going to build a relationship over a longer period of time. While discussing it, you may go back multiple times before you get the end product, and you don't have a catalog. You are just making sure that absolutely everything that you want or need in that set slash suit is going to be just for you. You get to pick your custom fabric. You get to pick the inside liner of your jacket. You're going to pick the buttons. You're going to pick the cufflinks on your shirt. You're going to pick if you want monograms. You're going to get every last detail of that set slash suit built just for you. So grip size, grip tape, all these different things. Does that shaft available in that head? Of course it is, because we're going to make sure that it fits. That's what the idea of it all comes together. And brand agnostic fitters that carry all of these products are like mini scientists. Their minds are like little supercomputers, and I love watching them work because they know what works with what and what fits in where. And at the end of the day, you're going to get a great set of golf clubs. And it doesn't mean that one is better than the other. It a lot of times comes down to what you are willing to potentially go through as far as the experience goes. You're going to pay more for the higher end fitting. And at the end of the day, you are going to something that's absolutely, totally maxed out. Doesn't mean you can't get maxed out from a single OEM fitting, but it just gives you the option in case they don't have something that, you know, may slightly fit you just a little bit better. And that's, to me, is kind of the art of it. Yes, there is a science there. And yes, there is, you know, understanding the specs of all these different golf clubs. So that is really the science-y art, like more of the science part of things. But then the art comes from understanding the swing and understanding a player and looking and talking to them, because this is where you're going to, when you're working with a fitter, be able to really understand the questions that they're asking. And I've talked to just regular golfers who are very much into golf and equipment, but they don't understand the idea of what they should be looking for in a proper fitting. And it really bugs me when I hear conversations about, I felt like I was getting sold something, because a good fitter, I mean, you're going in to get sold anyways. Like, that's the point. You're a captive audience. But if someone's trying to convince you why, if you feel like, you know, there's like a pressure to try and like get something, that's when it always feels weird to me. And I've never liked that. I never worked like that. I don't really care. And I never worked someplace where there was a commission involved as well, ever actually. So that worked really well. And so with that, at least in the golf industry, let's just hold that. I sold beer. I worked as a beer rep, and that kind of, I think most people understand that as a sales job kind of involves some type of commission. But anyways, I'll get back to that. I don't need to talk about that anymore. So, but I just want to be honest about that. So, in the golf setting, I've never worked on a commission-based schedule or system. So with that in mind, I always wanted to make sure the customer felt that they would be comfortable either coming back or asking questions after the fact and those kind of things. And it generally resulted in relationships that lasted a very long time. If you're in a fitting and you're talking to someone and it feels like they're really trying to sell you on one thing or sell you that you need to get this out of your golf club, then that to me is not something that I really enjoy as far as going. And I've seen it I've been on both sides of it, and you can always kind of tell if you have a little bit of experience in kind of any like atmosphere of being sold something, you generally kind of feel it. And so again, with that kind of in the back of your head, that's where when you talk to a good fitter and they're talking about why this is working and looking at your golf swing and understanding, like, looking at your tempo and realizing your tendencies, that's where the fitting comes down to a little bit of the art, where experience matters. Experience is so important when it comes to going through a fitting, because they can even if you're hitting off mats versus grass, and a lot of fittings are off mats anyways, you'll hear fitters and really good fitters go, okay, that sounded like this, that sounded like that, how did that feel, did it sound like this? Because they've done it so many times that they can almost, not that they're able to be like a track man or be a launch monitor, but they can help with the tendency of saying, that strike sounded better, that strike was better, that strike wasn't as good, let's get out of that club head, let's get out of this, let's look at the grip. Even if someone, and I always find this very impressive, especially in fitting scenarios where like a grip can be changed very easily, which is in most high-end fitting situations, where someone will be like, are you not feeling comfortable? Is there something about what's going on? And it's that ability to step in when you'll see it from fitters, and they'll say, is there, and a lot of times because people, it could be their first experience or they don't want to speak up, they'll say, I don't really like this grip, or, you know, there's something about this golf club, it doesn't, maybe feels heavy, it feels light, it doesn't, and they don't really originally off the top want to get into that discussion as the player, because they might not be able to explain exactly what they're feeling. And from the fitter side of things, they're able to ask the questions to get that person to not answer the question that how they want it to be answered, but answer the question the way they feel comfortable explaining it. And that to me is very important. So that really comes down, again, to the art. So is from just the fitting perspective, is it an art or a science? It's a bit of both. You have to understand the science behind launch monitors and the physics behind how a golf ball flies and relationships of club face angles and attack angles and dynamic loft and all these different things. You have to be able to understand that. That is a a value that's given to you from a system that is going to offer you data. So you have to be able to interpret that. That is science. That is purely science, plain and simple. But being able to communicate with a person and being able to understand and help create a dialogue and discuss feeling, not emotional feelings, maybe a little bit, but it's about like what the golfer is experiencing. Does it feel weird in a certain part of their golf swing? Does it feel heavy? Does it feel light? Does it feel too stiff? Does it feel too whippy? All these different things. And as soon as you see someone get that golf club, it's amazing. And, you know, ball speed will go up. Consistency goes way up. And accuracy goes way up. And dispersion comes way down. And you see this person immediately swing with more confidence because they just know, they feel that golf club doing everything that they're supposed to do. And that comes down to really, truly a mix of the art and science of club fitting. And to me, I always find that really impressive. And how does that relate back to what I was talking about off the top? My pizza analogy. It's kind of the same thing. You can follow a recipe, but there are certain parts of making a pizza. Yeah, this has really just become a podcast about pizza. I apologize if you're still even listening at this point. But let's say you have a tomato sauce. Like, oh, well, I like this spice a little different, or I like this, you know, I like this herb a little different in this sauce, and I like to have this tomato instead of that tomato. And that comes down to, okay, well, we've got the dough, that's the science part, but now we're going to get into a little bit of the art, because I'm looking at my personal preferences, because I can really change exactly the way I'm going to like it. And for the player, from a fitting perspective, that comes down to choosing a grip, choosing number of wraps of tape, and maybe choosing a ferrule. Right? Choosing a different color shaft band, all these different things. It's the opportunity to customize your golf clubs after that, which become more fun and more art. But the final solution is really a culmination of the two. And in reality, I guess that was just a great way of me working in the fact that I've been making a lot of pizza and talking about club fitting at the same time. Now we get to the building part of things. And this comes down to the same suit analogy, but we're not talking too much art at this point. Maybe a little bit. If you want to get into grinds and you know, working with your hands and being able to fine tune things, that does, I guess some people could say that it's an artistic pursuit. I don't really consider it that too much. You could call the end result art if you want. But when you could put a golf club together, it hits every single spec and the ferrule looks terrible. So scientifically, you built a good golf club, but it looks like garbage. And so that comes down to, you know, have you actually built a good golf club or not? It functions. It's great. It functions, but it doesn't look very good. And that's where, again, there is this fine little line. And from a club building perspective, this is where that idea of chemistry to me clicked for baking. And I know I keep bringing this back to this analogy, but it really did. It had this impact on me because, again, I always build golf clubs. I've been building golf clubs for a very long time. I have not been putting things together to make an end result as far as a pizza or whatever it happens to be I'm baking, as far as ingredients goes, into the same thing. And as I always, like, you know, have these discussions all the time. I had a discussion with my wife and I said, well, does it really matter if you put that much salt into this much sugar? I mean, can't it just be like, you know, close? And then she said to me, and it was brilliant. She said, what happens if you don't mix your epoxy right? By God, she's right. It would fall apart. And I was like, okay, just give it to me an analogy that I can explain, I can understand. And it was like that fitting example, right? When someone says, well, I can't really understand, like, I can't describe the feeling that I'm feeling with the golf club. And then they ask the question a different way. And you go, oh, okay, I understand. Yes, this is kind of like, this to me is what I'm experiencing. And as far as that side of things, I was like, yeah, well, yeah, if like I mix epoxy down to the 10th of a gram. Because for me, we're using a two-part epoxy that comes in two separate containers. OEMs have these like big vats and they pump out and they auto-mix and you get this congealed blob and you just have to put golf clubs together. Or you can use really, really expensive stuff that comes in a tube. You just squeeze the trigger on the little epoxy gun, just like a caulking gun or something like that, and you're going to get the exact mix every single time. That's the beauty of those containers, but they're way more expensive. Whereas from the OEM side, they get a much more volume bulk rate because they're buying these big tubs that they're mixing themselves. So for me as a club owner, I definitely fit in between, skewing more towards the slightly expensive stuff, because I buy them in two smaller tube bottles, and by volume, they are exactly the same. So it's a one-to-one volume ratio, but it's not one-to-one as far as mass goes because of the density of the liquid. This is science. This is purely science. So one is one. It's like 1 to 0.7. So for every 1 gram, I have to put 0.7 grams of the part two of the epoxy, the whatever, I don't know, just part two. And so if I don't do that right, and I'm not even close, well, the epoxy is never going to set. And if I don't do it, if I do it right on the other side or wrong on the other side of things, sorry, then the epoxy is going to be way more brittle. And it's either going to break down way too easily, or it's just not going to set again, and its clubs are going to fall apart after a few hits. And that is like the nightmare curse of any club you can ever build, is have it fall apart after the first couple shots. And I mean, generally, you're not going to have a huge issue with epoxy if you mix it right and it's good quality epoxy. It will not break down unless something truly significant happens to break down that chemical bond. Either it wasn't cleaned, or there was oil in the hosel, or some type of little silly factor that causes it to not actually bond those two things together, have it be the shaft and the club head. And so when you're doing that, it is truly an exact science, because you don't want things to fall apart and you don't want people to get hurt. And that's where there's really not a lot of artistry in that. Does it matter as far as when I said turning down ferrules? I take great pride in when I turn down ferrules that they look good. Because to me, and I've said it a lot, if you can't deliver something that is something that you can't deliver a golf club to somebody where the parts that are visible look good and grips are on straight and you put the right number of tapes on there and you put the shaft bands on straight, or at least you've lined the damn things up if they don't have, if they already have graphics on the shaft and you're not getting pured or spined or whatever you're going to do to them, and you're just going to line them up with the graphics down and they're all over the place and there's epoxy everywhere, then if you're not willing to go through that effort as a club builder to put out a good golf club to somebody, even if it's just yourself, take pride in your own work, for goodness sake, then what did you do when the things that I can't measure, like, are the lie-lofts, right? Did you listen to the swing weight that I wanted? Are these shafts even, are they soft-stepped? Are they hard-stepped? Were there little details that I asked to be done? And for me, like, I put together all my own golf clubs just because I'm a nut, and I like to have that satisfaction of knowing that everything in my golf bag I put together, and I don't have to worry about it. I don't have to rely on anybody else. Because as a golfer, as much as I would love to be able to just blame somebody else for a mistake that I made, I know that when I put my own golf clubs together, I have no one to blame but myself and my own golf swing. So as far as the art and the science of club building and club fitting goes, there is a meld of the two. I don't think that it's ever going to be one or the other. And part of this comes down to the fact that if you've ever worked or started working with someone who's a less experienced fitter but is very knowledgeable on the dynamics of clubs and how they go together, they're very eager. And I've worked, and this is what people have to do. You have to learn the process. And so you can understand shaft specs and you can understand all these different things. But to be able to put them together in that actual fitting with a golfer is very difficult. And that's why really good fitters are really good fitters. And it's why really good builders are really good builders, because you know that they go through the process of making sure that everything is right at the end. Because whether it be for myself or for somebody else, it has to be right. It has to be right. And I think, you know, it's golf clubs. I get it. It's a hobby. It's something where, I mean, other than a head flying off, a lot of people aren't going to notice if you make a tiny little stupid mistake, like a lie is off by 1 degree or a loft is off by 1 degree, but it matters to me. Because I want to know that that person can trust those golf clubs. And if they come back and I need to measure them again, unless something outrageous has happened, then I can say, yes, they're right to spec. This is exactly what we're supposed to do. Let's take a look at maybe altering them because something obviously isn't working. And it comes down to getting a suit. And I don't even need to use pizza as this analogy, because when it comes down to that suit, I like to think I've been custom fit for a couple shirts before, and a suit, which included like pants and the jacket and everything like that. And it's for my wedding. And so I went back multiple times, knew the guy's name, knew the guy who was sewing stuff up, knew his name. And I was like, how do you feel? How do you look? Is there something you want to change? Maybe this was a little different last time. Let's tweak this. Let's tweak that. When I left there and I had that suit, it looked like $1 million. I don't know if it fits anymore. I haven't put it on in a while. Maybe that's a good question to like find out later on. But that it really comes down to like the idea of like when you have that experience, have it be getting fit for a suit or getting fit for a set of golf clubs, you want that confidence when you leave to go play. And you want to be able to give and provide that confidence to the player. And that's the role of a fitter and a club builder, is to be able to provide that confidence and also provide the product that's going to fit them. And that really is that melding of the art and science. Hope you enjoyed the show this week. That was like completely off the wall as far as like, I don't know, 10-minute talk on pizza and suits and all kinds of things. But anyways, again, I really do hope you enjoyed the show this week. It was a little different take on the subject because I think it's really important to, just like in fittings, provide different ways to explain things, because I know my mind works differently when things are explained differently to me. I picture things really well. I'm very visual. I don't learn very well from a book I need to get my hands on. I think that's why I got into club building in the first place. So if you have any questions, remember, reach out. Twitter and Instagram, RDS Brath. You can reach at any time. I always try and answer as many questions as possible. Pay attention this week because I will do another question and answer at some point in time on Instagram at RDS Brath, and then on Spec as well. Follow us along on the channel on Instagram because I will either post the topic, post a little picture that goes along with it. And one of the things too, which I'm just going to throw out there, I did it recently. I've been really struggling with organization in my shop, mostly because I'm a club hoarder. I don't really hoard anything. I don't collect basically anything. I have a couple guitars. I have some old video games to kick around. I'm not like a video game junkie. It's an old Nintendo 64. I just can't get myself to like get rid of it because I got some really fun games I like to play once in a while, once in a literally a blue moon. But I just can't get myself to get rid of it. But for clubs, I have such a hard time getting rid of things. And I love to collect them because I know those little stories behind them. And I understand why people collect things in like hobbies or passions that they love, because they don't just admire the product, they admire the people that made it. They understand where the design came from, where the history came from, where this little design feature or this shape of a like the back of the golf club or a model boat or a model car, and like the all these different model year things of cars. I always admire people who are able to like point those things out, because I literally have no idea, like beyond like a few very specific things, to say, oh, that's a 52 Dodge whatever because of this tailpipe and that headlight. I'm like, that's cool. I don't see it. But I can look at a golf shaft and go, yeah, that came out this time because I'm a complete golf nerd. So anyways, I did post a picture because I finally kind of organized all of my irons underneath my bench. It's been killing me. It's been bugging me for a long time to like, where am I going to put all this stuff? And I built a rack underneath my bench. And I think a lot of people thought it was really cool. I've seen it done before. I'm not the original person that came up with this idea, but I had to figure out a place to put it, and it just happened to work under the bench. I thought it was really neat. I wanted to share it, so remember to check it out there. And that's the show. So remember, if you have any questions, please reach out. And as always, thanks for listening.